So
I mostly work on gravity-related stuff, ranging from cosmology, eternal inflation, bubble collision, to some ADS, CFT-related things, and also some observation about gravitational waves and gravitational lensing. And I will be here generally on Monday and Tuesday, and occasionally one day more, not decided yet. So if you want to talk to me, welcome to, well, maybe I'll find you first, instead of you finding me. So today I want to talk about this ADS instability and the phase lock cascade. The first half will be kind of a review, introduction to the problem, and report of the current status. The second part is a half-baked work in progress. I'll show you some evidence we found, and that will be a paper joined with Ben Freivogel. And you know, a lot of the material will be based on other people's work, and I hope I have a long list of names here, not missing too many people. And you can see Parameter actually have a largest group of people working on this topic, and they made very good contribution, and I will show you later. But this is an international topic. You can see it actually pioneered by a physicist in Poland, Bison and Rostorowski, and people in UCSB, people in Belgium, both very interested in this problem. And finally, where I came from, University of Amsterdam, we also have a small group working on this. Okay. So first of all, what is ADS instability? It's very simple. It's written down here. First of all, you write down the metric of empty global ADS. And this is an ADS, basically D plus one. D is the space-like dimensions. This is an initial metric. It solves the Einstein equation. So if you just leave it there, it won't become anything else. However, if you add something to it, add a small perturbation, you add a little bit of matter, then it will start to evolve. And then it is possible that after some time, it goes to something very different. For example, the total mass is conserved, so the energy you add in the beginning won't change, that won't grow. However, the distribution of such energy can change. And if you focus that energy in a smaller and smaller region, it is possible that you actually end up with a black hole. Black hole is effectively putting the energy into a region that's comparable to the structural radius of such energy. So there is a possibility that you start with this geometry, but after a while, the geometry becomes something very different, like GRR and GTD has order one difference developed, then that's instability. Is that if you put, even if you put in infinitesimal energy, if you take the limit with this M goes to zero, you still evolve to a very small black hole that creates an order one back reaction somewhere, that I will call it an instability. And in this fast definition, there's one thing missing, which is here. And that's somewhat a crucial question in asking the instability problem, is how much time do you allow it to evolve? And we start with a very simple example. This is a usual instability people are familiar with. You have a hilltop, you have a ball. You sit exactly there, it won't roll down at all. But if you give a very small deviation, right, starting there, it's going to roll down. It's going to reach an order one distance in a time scale that is set by the log of your initial deviation. So that's the kind of the instability problem in the usual context. You are going to roll down in the log time scale. And that is also called a linear instability, because if you write down the equation of motion, you will see that you are pushed away by a linear force, linearly proportional to the deviation. It turns out that ADS instability is not that simple, because in ADS, you can show there is no tachyonic mode. You won't have a linear force pushing you away. The possibility of getting moving away from ADS is from nonlinear terms in your equation of motion. And their effect is harder to solve and smaller. Harder to solve means that it's hard to get analytical answer. Smaller means if you evolve it numerically, it takes a longer time to see the effect. That's why it's a harder problem and an interesting problem. And I have to say that a few years ago, probably around five years ago, Bison and Rostorowski basically initiated a recent hype in this problem by demonstrating a very interesting numerical result. Oh, by the way, feel free to ask questions anytime. I'll try to explain as clear as possible. Although if the experts ask some questions, I might defer those to the end of the talk. So this is the simulation they show. First of all, they're going to start with some initial condition that is like a shell of energy. It's not exactly what they saw, but in spirit, it's right.
Of anti-de-Sitter.
Yeah.
Does the instability come in at some finite order in perturbation theory, or is it actually like a non-perturbed?
It is a finite order in terms of if you expand a small deviation from MPADS, comes in the finite power of that.
At the next order.
Especially at the next order, you're
saying. It's a little bit from the particle physics or field theory perspective. There is no instability, okay? So the instability that you talk about is the evolution towards a black hole formation, okay? Or, you know, so it's not like you have a tachyon. So there is no tachyon. Otherwise, it will look very funny from ADS-CVT perspective. So we know the dual field theory is completely perfectly stable. So this. Normally what you call instability in that language is formulated as approach towards thermal equilibrium. So if you're gonna call approach towards equilibrium in instability, I don't
small
know.
It's not thermal equilibrium, it's smaller.
So it's a speaker to postpone your
There is no forcing phase transition in a microcanonical ensemble.
No, sorry, it's small.
Yes,
it's really easy.
Okay, we'll have a lot of discussion after this, I promise. But in the meanwhile, let me go through the basics so other people understand what's going on here. So in their numerical result, they basically show the following. I put in some initial energy in the form of, say, a massless scalar field. So I put in some total energy of m. If I put them in a very narrow range, like this distance is also like 2m. Know that there is spherical symmetry in this picture? And I aim them toward the origin, right? It didn't fall in data. Then obviously, it's going to become a black hole here because they are forced to put a lot of energy into a small region. So that's obvious. But this is a very fine-tuned initial data. It doesn't show instability. You need to see how generally this happened. So what it did is they reduced the amplitude. So the mass becomes smaller to a point that it is insufficient, and the width stays the same. So when you reduce the mass to a point, it will be insufficient to form a black hole immediately. But very interestingly, what they observe is that, okay, you don't form a black hole, and you interact with itself somewhere near r equal to 0. After a while, you escape. Basically, some deformed wave profile escape. They're going to run toward infinity. But ADS has a reflective boundary condition, naturally. So nothing escapes. They bounce back and get a second try. And guess what? They form a black hole right there. If you reduce the amplitude just enough that it doesn't form black hole in the first time, what they observe is that it forms black hole in the second time. If you keep reducing your amplitude so that it fails the second time, or you make it the third time and the fourth time. So what they observe is that.
But this is all a spherical symmetry, right?
This is within spherical symmetry, yes. So if I call the amplitude epsilon, what they observe is that in about this time scale, as you reduce epsilon, you just wait longer in that kind of time scale, they observe a black hole formation. Okay. So that's the things I want to write down here. And they made the following conjecture is that generically, they try a few other slightly different initial shape and do the same thing, and same thing happens. So the conjecture that ADS space is unstable, if you introduce a generic perturbation, you are going to form black hole in this time scale. And note that these two claims are both quite interesting because there are a lot of different ways to deviate from MPADS. You don't have to become a black hole. Becoming black hole is in some sense expected, but in some sense not. And this is the shortest possible time scale. Anything can happen. Anything interesting can happen. Because epsilon squared is basically the mass. Mass is basically the coupling in this gravitational interacting theory. So if your time scale is shorter than that, the change you accumulate would have been suppressed. Won't become order one yet. anything interesting can only happen earlier at this time scale. And they claim that this interesting thing happened exactly at the earliest possible time. So that triggers a lot of activities. And today, I have to report a status as a big question mark here. Because this is not confirmed in some sense. Okay, and I'll show you why. Okay. Any questions? Okay. All right. So the first thing happens right after.
Just one question.
Yes. So numerical result only try like a few discrete initial conditions, yes? And we'll say that it tells you that those few directions in finite epsilon is unstable. But I'll come to that very soon. Okay. So basically, this I'm trying to draw the phase space of initial conditions. And the radial direction is amplitude. The angular direction is basically the shape, how you distribute your initial energy. And this point in the origin is empty ADS. And the ADS instability problem is basically asking, okay, I want to introduce an infinitesimal deviation from this point, and does that lead to any instability? Does that evolve to something different? And the numerical result they saw is that, well, I try some epsilon, I vary epsilon. Of course, it's very difficult numerically to have a small epsilon because you need finer resolution and longer time. But try some finite epsilon and saw that some initial shape does form black hole. But later, mostly by people here, they show that, let me start with different set of initial conditions, which is not very different from that one. And they appear to be stable up to the same time scale they try, maybe even longer. Stable in the sense that they don't give large gravitational back reaction to the metric. And sometimes even better, sometimes even see that the change in the field profile itself is actually very small, almost a constant. So those are the numerical results in finite epsilon. But none of them directly address the problem of this point. But it turns out that you can, by a little bit improvement in analytical understanding, you can say something about this here. And I'll show you how. So first of all, we want to formalize this statement about instability at this time scale. We have to define two things. One is that we define a norm. Norm basically quantifies when you back react this field to the metric, how large deviation is. And when phi is small, you can define this norm in a very tricky way that it obeys every simple rule of norm you want. If you time to c, the norm is increased by c, and it also obeys triangular inequality. And you also need to know how it evolves. You put in initial condition, you need to solve some equations so you know how it evolves to a later time. But in order to ask the question of instability at that time scale, you don't care about some t. What you should care is to choose a tau, a finite number tau, and you always ask about what happened to the field when that tau is multiplied by this. You take the initial amplitude, and divide that number tau twice, you get a large time. This is basically the meaning of that 1 over epsilon squared time scale. You choose a fixed tau, you always ask the question, what does the field become in that time? And you actually don't really care too much about the field. What you care about is this. Does it give you a big geometric back reaction? It turns out that this is given by the following expression. So what does this mean? It means that if you want to know what's the geometric back reaction at a later tau, which is the already rescaled time, it is actually the initial amplitude times this function, which is only a function of tau, and the shape of initial condition. This is the initial field. This is already the norm. So you don't care about the overall amplitude. Only thing you care is how you distribute them. Introduce initial distribution. I only need to know this function of tau plus a small correction. If the correction stays small, then I already know what happens later. This is linear in terms of gravity. Yes, first order in gravity perturbation theory.
Yeah.
Ah, you mean this? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So the what gives you that dynamics is some weird dynamical nonlinear stuff, but the final amplitude is proportional to the initial amplitude in this one. If you always ask the question in the longer time. Okay. So this is called the rescaling symmetry in this problem. So, and this tells you something very good about the stable thing you found numerically. Right? That is because if I take epsilon to zero, right? If I already found a stable solution at finite epsilon, that means I have a finite tau, assuming the correction is small. A stable solution, the correction stays small. Okay? So if I found a finite tau, then I can take the limit that this goes to zero. I know that goes to zero too. So it's kind of a little bit unfair is that when epsilon goes to zero, what you want to know is whether this thing, this function f, diverges or not. Because as long as at some tau it doesn't diverge, then you multiply your finite initial amplitude. It's always the final amplitude. You take this to zero, that always goes to zero. The only way for you to be unstable is actually to find some time that this function, find some initial condition that this function blows up at a finite tau. Then that will give you instability. And unfortunately, if you do numerical stuff for the collapsing ones, you always stop at somewhere the black hole already formed in a finite epsilon case. Right? And that is when this combination reaches some order one. But that still only give you knowledge about a finite f. The numerical data here never tell you f diverges. However, numerical data here does tell you f is finite. So it's kind of unfair. By knowing that, you actually know you can take the zero amplitude limit. Every stable solution, if they exist in finite epsilon, they also exist here. But you will have problem doing that. Because, well, you just show a finite f, you don't know whether it diverges there. Okay?
If you show that you have formed a black hole, then that's all. Because nothing really diverges when you form a black hole.
That's right. That's the problem. If you had a finite epsilon, you show that it forms a black hole, but nothing diverges yet because you have finite epsilon. So you have proved that this f reaches some value at a tau, which is not divergent yet. Therefore, if you reduce the initial amplitude to zero, this still go to zero at that tau, because this vector is finite. You have to show that this diverges, then even when you take this to zero, you still get the non-zero back reaction on the metric. That is instability.
Suppose in the stable case, you actually had an instability that is around the epsilon to minus 25. How do you then say that you can take a limit? I mean, I don't know how you support that.
No, because if you epsilon to the much higher power, then at this time, the
taking the time as being one or epsilon squared. Yes. Now I have something hidden back at epsilon 25, to the 25,
yes.
That it's going to blow up. But you're not picking that time, so you actually look at the solution there and it's perfectly smooth, perfectly one behind it.
Yes, okay. Yes. So when I took, okay, I forgot to say that, I'm sorry, thank you very much. That when I ask in a stability problem, when I say it's stable, it means it's stable up to that time scale only. Right? It is also still possible. If you show that it's stable to this time scale, it is still possible that its instability will develop in an even longer time scale.
But
we know in some cases they do look like they are, actually prohibits you to extend that stability island all the way to absolute goal zero. Because
this time span?
Well, I mean, you are extending it. It's.
I'm extending only
in the epsilon minus two time scale. I mathematically, I just pick a finite tau and I ask this question.
Yeah, but it's not
clear how you get
infinity.
When you draw lines, you mean only the subset of, I think you mean, so tell me if I'm wrong, I think you mean only the subset of the stable things which happen to survive.
Okay. But mathematically, there is a well-defined, you are doing a serious expansion. So the question is, does that serious expansion in absolute, whatever extra time scale, have a finite or infinite or zero radius of convergence? And that's a big question. So if the series has finite radius of convergence in absolute, then your statement is, then your statements are correct. And so you can make this conclusion. However, if the radius of convergence is zero, and that's precisely what would happen if the additional.
So I know where you're getting. I think in doing this, actually, in some perturbation theory, I expand this back reaction, and there are high order terms in epsilon. And there's no reason that expansion converges in this formalism. If it does not, I have trouble. And actually, I can tell you that what I require is weaker than that. I do not need that expansion to infinite order to converge. What I only need is that the expansion I do to this order, the correction I have is smaller than the next order.
Where you didn't mention it in your acknowledgement, but there is quite a number of work where people did with Galois-Bonnetron. And at this order, at the orders that you are talking about, there is no difference between ADS and ADS Galois-Bonnet. Mm-hmm. But at higher order, there must be a difference, because in one case, there is a small black hole in a limit epsilon goes to zero, and in the other case, there is simply not.
I agree.
You know there is a difference,
I agree,
but let me postpone that. But what you're saying is the difficulty happened here. Are you arguing that in Gauss-Bonnet, I also fail to do this here instead of that?
You don't see, when it is a limit that you are doing, there is no difference between Gauss-Bonnet and not Gauss-Bonnet. But the difference will show up at the higher orders, precisely the ones that you are ignoring. And it would be the difference that would imply that in one case, the black hole physically cannot form because there is no black hole at that energy. There is a gap.
I agree that about this, and that is exactly the statement I have in here. I don't know how to do that, and there may be other reasons I cannot do that. But I should guarantee you there is a weaker condition than you just said about the absolute convergence of the theory, that this is still doable. And I wrote it in a recent paper. I'll explain to you later. Okay, but I can explain to you that later after this. It's already in a paper. So I can explain that to you. All right. But for the rest of the audience, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask this question, this mathematically well-defined question, as the answer at this time scale. Okay. And that's going to happen in the next of this talk. And we already know finite just by looking at the numerical result. And they also did some much better work, Lewis and Alex and Stephen, who's not here, other people. That not only we have numerical examples of the stable, they can also give you analytical reason why those are exactly stable. Okay. So basically, we understand the stable solutions all the way in this limit in quite well. We know they are there, and we don't know those yet. And I will try to answer that question in this talk. Okay. Sorry for the...
All right,
So in order to proceed, I need to write down the two things I jump over. One is this. Right, we need to define a norm to quantify what is the back reaction to the metric. And that is done like this. For example, you take the norm is defined that you take the back reaction to the metric, you have a calculated new GTT, you subtract the vacuum ADS GTT, and you do that to GRR, and you do that to the off-diagonal terms. And you take the sum of all of them square, and find the time and space. First of all, find a radius where the deviation is maximized. You take that. And you allow it to evolve for one ADS time, and I'll tell you why. and allow you to maximize. So the maximum quantity, that number is going to be defined as the norm. And you can check, but you should trust me that that norm satisfies the condition I need, triangular inequality and the scaling property. So this defines how much a field changes the geometry to deviate from MTADS. And it's actually quite easy to estimate, because all we care is that in the end, we're putting a very small amount of mass. If you are going to form any interesting structure, you have to do that in a very small region. In a very small region, you can ignore the fact that it's in ADS, that R term, you actually don't care. Right? And locally, it's Minkowski. You can just calculate the Minkowski back reaction by calculating the enclosed mass and the induced gravitational potential.
Yes, yes. Okay. Okay. So the entire discussion
will be within spherical symmetry. And you're right that it doesn't prove anything outside spherical symmetry. But I'll tell you the reason why I have faith about that in the end. Okay. So this is the way to define a good norm that quantifies how much a field evolved to something and back around a metric. Questions? And then we also need to know what is the evolution of the field. And that is usually done in this, also developed by the local group, the two-time formalism. You first Fourier transform the field into the eigenstate and the amplitude. And you know that if you ignore back reaction, each of your eigenstate is just harmonic oscillator. But when you couple to gravity, you will induce basically a quartic coupling that comes in this form. And this will change your equation of motion. And then there are high order terms. Yes. And they might necessarily converge, that is true. Okay. But all I care is that I calculate in a situation where after 180th time, this contribution is bigger than that. That's all I need. Okay. And then from this, you can see the amplitude and the phase of every given mode is not going to stay constant anymore. It's going to slowly evolve with time. And basically, that's what's going to happen. We're going to quantify how those evolve with time and take the later A and B, plug them into a definition norm, and see how that grows. That defines the function F, and will tell you whether it diverges or not. And the way to evolve that is basically you just write down rewrite equation motion, becomes this. And you'll notice something special come up here. Is that usually you sum over all the possible things as long as the coefficient is not zero. Here, there's a limitation on that. Because we know this is basically a force driving a simple harmonic oscillator. If you drive not at the resonance, it just gives you a constant extra piece. It doesn't grow. It's not an interesting one. All we care about is you drive it at resonance. You're going to create a growing amplitude of something. And that slowly changes the distribution of this A. Right. So we only sum over an at resonance state and get their effect on how they change the amplitude and how they change the phase. So this is basically just rewriting that equation. And I'm going to do another rewriting, is that I don't actually care about the absolute amplitude here, right? Because F is basically the scale invariance there. So I'm going to divide every A by the initial amplitude. And doing that is exactly the same thing as I change the definition of time to be this longer time. And I can basically just rewrite all the equation here by replacing T with tau and every A with a bar. If I do this, that's the same equation, just change the variable. And this, and also, I can define this to be that. And all I care is how A bar and B bar slowly changes with time. And that will give me a function of tau, which is F of tau. All right. Let me rearrange the blackboard a little bit. any questions before I proceed to the next part? So basically, I've gone through the first half. Now, two tools. One is defining the norm. Another is the evolution of tau, evolution of phi. And combine them, I can get F tau to answer that question.
So
I want to convince you that the answer to that question, we need to understand what is called a phase lock cascade. I'll present two types of evidence to that. The first type is empirical. That is basically, we take what we observe from those numerical simulations and then try to see why a phase lock is very important here. So the numerical observation on the address is the following thing, that when black hole forms, when you repeat basically what similar to what those people do, start with some image condition, eventually black hole forms, you can observe that the amplitude is given by a power law. Okay? And for some very particular value of alpha, these are numerical observations, so they might be not accurate, but they are special enough. This is ADS 3 plus 1. 4 plus 1. Okay. So when you start with some initial data, maybe you just excited one or two or three modes or something, and you do whatever you want, and evolve. If you see that in the end they are going to form a black hole, then you take a Fourier transform sometime right before that. You can ask, what's the amplitude per mode I have? And it turned out to be given by a power law. Okay. And this is actually not a very unfamiliar situation. People often make connection to what's called the Kolmogorov power law. And that's in turbulence. So what to make an analogy is this, similarity. We observe two similarities here. Actually, the equation of motion looks almost the same. In those systems, you can also just Fourier transform and treat it as a bunch of coupled harmonic oscillator. And you choose the coupling in the form of a coupling, you can get to the case where it's quartically coupled. So basically, just that equation with slightly different arrangement of the coefficient. Okay. And in that system, they can show that when you...
No, this is cubic in the
equation of motion. So it's quadratic in the Lagrangian. And you can arrange that.
So you're saying in fluid mechanics, the first nonlinear terms are cubic the same way that
they
are here?
Not always. You have to arrange. So this means that you have actually quadratic in the Lagrangian. So sometimes you have something lower, which is cubic. You have to remove that effect in some special fluid. So to get that, this is the leading order effect.
There is a difference. In the fluid case, you have two modes that cascade into a third. Here you have three modes that provide four.
That is what I'm saying. So usually you have the phi cube in the Lagrangian, so two more will go to one. But the same theory still applies if you just say you can remove that and you have three modes go to one to exactly mimic your system.
I think you're thinking on the fluid case you have the two modes into a third.
Yeah. But the mathematical structure is equivalent. You just want to say three go to one.
You yeah, but there's a crucial difference. You have units in Kolmogorov. Here you don't. So if you want to have to obtain the minus phi third rule, I mean, units is very important. Here, that goes away from you.
Okay. I'm not going to use that anyway, so I don't care, but I do agree.
There's another thing that you pretty much put a lot by hand, and you, for example, you make an assumption that you prepare states that you evolve in ADS by minimally coupled scalar, and that's why sort of that's the way how the leading effect shows up. But if instead you would put a scalar field that would have a potential, so you can engineer effects
yes.
that are stronger than back reaction
yes.
coming from that. And
yes.
so, you know, you can really make it similar to, if you want, with a cubic term.
Yeah, I cannot make the
ADS case to the cubic term. I agree, it's difficult. But I can just write down in my paper a cubic, I can write down that equation and use the Kolmogorov technique to solve it, which is possible. Okay. So and because it's similar, it's basically the same EOM with that different coefficient, maybe. And then it's often observed that also attends parallel. You start with some initial spectrum and go to this fluid. After some time, you look at the spectrum again, it demonstrates a parallel. But unfortunately, I have to tell you that this is where similarity ends. It's not going to be very useful to think about Kolmogorov if you observe the following two things. One is that the difference. If you follow their technique, it is possible to derive what that parallel is from this. Sorry, let me write it. So if you know the scaling behavior, four, okay? So there are four of them. These are just uniformly scaled version of that, okay? And then you, sorry. It's not, right? And there's some beta uniform scaling in this, roughly. If you have that, and you follow the Kolmogorov the mathematical technique, you should be able to derive what the heck is that alpha. And they should match this, okay? And they don't. Actually, no one tried to derive that because we already know that don't. And the second thing is, if you look at a paper, it actually tells you, yes, in this system, let it run for a while, it's going to attain some parallel. But they attain such parallel in a longer time scale. Okay? And these are the differences that I dare to say is definitely not the usual thing you analyze by the same technique. It's, first of all, you don't have the right relation between this scaling and that alpha. Second, it's going to take longer time. The thing we observe in the ADS takes a shorter time scale, epsilon minus 2. This is longer. And if you go through their derivation, it's not so difficult to understand why. So if we look at the, say, this equation. So, okay. All right, I'll just jump. Sorry. So you may imagine that you are driving the harmonic oscillator. You're always giving energy to it. That is not true, right? If the harmonic oscillator is already oscillating, you drive in some phase, you give it energy. You drive it in the opposite phase, you take energy away. That's why there is a sign something about all the phases. There's a phase dependence in how you do it. In a fluid case, there's so many modes of them, we don't know what their exact phase are. The way to estimate is do an ensemble average, assuming random phases. So what actually people derive those parallel is we basically square that equation of motion, get rid of all the phase dependence, and understand the dynamics in that set of equation. When you square everything, well, the coupling becomes even smaller. It takes longer time. And that's the reason why I think in the ADS case, because the things happen at a shorter time scale, it must not be such a phase random average out behavior. It must be governed by dynamics, which comes with coherent phases. The phases are all aligned to give you a certain fixed effect in one direction, and that gives rise to the result we saw in ADS. So this is the first empirical evidence that if you use the Kolmogorov thing, it just takes too long a time. The parallel doesn't match. It cannot be that. And the shorter time scale comes from the fact that the phases are coherent in our dynamics. And there's a second piece of evidence, which I probably won't write down anything for. It's a simple observation. If you take these parallels, oh wait, I should write down something, sorry, I'm wrong. Right, so this is the first piece of evidence. I should write it here. Not. Not Kolmogorov, which suggests some phase coherence. The second piece of evidence, let me get a note, yes, come from here, right? So now I have some power law. Let me just compute what's the back reaction to the metric, right? Just for fun. And I realize that, okay, I want to compute this M at some R bar, integral from 0 to R bar. And well, I'm just going to take the phi dot term, for example, because they are similar.
Those are just from fully nonlinear simulations or just from solving those equations?
From fully nonlinear.
Fully nonlinear. Okay, so they don't make us two-time approximation, do they?
No, that's fully nonlinear.
That's
yeah.
Fully nonlinear.
But then from the two-time approximation,
reproduce that.
Okay. So you can calculate the mass, and you see that. Sorry. Did not know how to pre-write this on the blackboard, so you have to wait for me. Okay, so what happens is that you actually see it is rather important. The phases are rather important. Okay? Just knowing that your amplitude goes like that is not going to give you an answer directly. Because you square something, and whether the cross term survive or not, statistically, depends on the phases. Right. So there are two kind of cases. One is that you basically don't get to have any cross term survive. And you're doing a sum. That is roughly the square. You square first, then sum. Okay, I'm jumping some steps, so if you're confused, about other detail other than the fact that there are different, ask me later. This is basically called a random phase. And if they're coherent, you get to sum them first. Then square, right? This is coherent. You can see they will give you different answers, right? In particular, it will be in this situation, it's a power law. Sometimes this diverges, and that is not. It's much larger than that, much more terms here. Right. So it turns out the phases are important in the information of you want to get what is norm of phi, what is exactly geometric vector reaction. And you plug in those numbers, you realize that if you use the random phase sum, the result is actually not a black hole. You have to use the coherent sum to make the result black hole. I have to say, if you use the random B, the result is not black hole, but it's not small. It is still a big deviation. It's a big deviation not in the form of a black hole. Basically, black hole requires V and M to grow in some way proportional to each other. And if you mess up that, it's not a black hole. It's some kind of other singular type of stuff, but it's not black hole. But numerically, we observe black hole. So this is the second piece of evidence that the numerical thing we observe, the collapse, come from a phase coherent dynamic. Empirical evidence is that the black hole. Yes. That's right. If it's random, it will be singular in some sense, but not exactly a black hole. If they are not in those power law, then they can be a black hole. And in general, you should know that whether they are coherent or not changes a lot on the answer of what's the geometric back reaction. Question?
Because that's going to change the phases.
Yes. Very good question. I'll come to that.
So I don't average over time difference. I scan from 0 to 2 pi and find a maximum. That's what I have to do. Because basically, every 0 to 2 pi, everything is going to repeat. It bounces back and forth in ADS. And any instant of time may have a big back reaction. That's a big back reaction. So I have to scan through time in one period to find a maximum. and calculate these quantities.
But if they reach maximum at different
times,
then you overestimate
it. Yeah, so I'm going to sum up together and then use the maximum. I'm going to calculate this quantity, and it will depend on time. Periodically, I'll pick the maximum. All right, so these are the two empirical evidence. Finally, I get to write down the real equation, the real technical equation in this talk, other than just hand-wavy stuff. All right, so the final step is to find my notes. Sorry. Right. Here. What are the analytical evidence I can provide for my claim that the collapse is a phase lock dynamic? Actually, let me know. Yeah.
Here, I think maybe that's something that was asked just before. Can be time dependent, right? So initially, you can prepare ANs that you are saying that coherent, whatever the picture is, a
yes.
coherent state, but it's a question of time evolution
yes.
in this, say, two-time formalism that you go from one description to another. So how do you know that, you know, that the classification random or coherent is, you know, time translationally invariant?
It's not invariant, and that's the next part of the call.
Okay.
Right.
Sure.
What does Can I, in some sense, maintain phase coherence in the dynamics? Can I have that in the beginning? Those are important questions, and those will be the final part of my talk right now. So, yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to erase this. I'm going to keep that. So the first part, I'm going to show you that this particular power law is a consistent final state that maintains phase coherence. So basically, I can derive alpha from beta by demanding that you maintain phase coherent in something that calls phase locked. Right? The following, I just need to solve this equation. Oh, before that, I need to tell you what do I mean by phase coherent. Sorry. So this is the phase, not only Bn, but there's a time-dependent piece in that. That's the phase. And you can imagine one case of phase coherence is that you pick p equal to 0, Bn all equal to 0, everything is fine. And by the way, only care about asymptotically, large n, because it's about whether the sum diverges or converges. So in the asymptotic limit, omega n is proportional to n. Okay. So of course, everything is 0, that's coherent phase. But I can have an even looser condition than that is I only need my Bn to be some n and the function of tau. As long as Bn is proportional to n, it's fine. Why? Because you can always find omega n, which is basically n t subject n c tau, well, equal to 0 mod 2 pi. So if your extra phase Bn grows linearly with n, you can always find one time that cancels all of them. So that's actually the coherent phase. If your Bn grows faster, like n squared or something, you fail to do that, and it starts to become random phase. But if your Bn grows linearly with n, you can always use the t to cancel them. So my standard of coherent phase will be, well, check asymptotically, does my B stays as something proportional to N? Okay. And we can just solve that equation. 2 omega N. And since I'm copying, I'm going to do some trick on the way because it's just N. Omega N becomes N. And I have a sum of AN inverse, sum of that. Right. So what I'm trying to show you is that this is a self-consistent solution. If your phase is coherent and you're in that power law, it's going to stay that way. as a self-consistent solution. If you are in this, then that cosine actually is 1. Because Bn is just proportional to n, you, according to the resonant condition, they cancel each other, it's always 0, so cosine disappears. I just have this equation. And I hope that when I plug in the right power law, this will tell me that Bn indeed stays as proportional to n. And that's going to happen. And to do that, I'm just going to do an integral approximation. Be aware that sometimes this integral approximation goes wrong. Okay, I'm going to plug in that particular power law. And I write down the basically the IR amplitude A0 explicitly for you to keep track of that. And then there is a remaining of the power law. And you have an integral of dk, dl, dm, delta function of k plus m, subtract l, subtract n, c, k, l, m, n, and then k, l, m, minus l. And yeah. So basically, I'm using an integral approximation of that infinite sum. All the sum goes from 0 to infinity. And the resonant condition is replaced by the delta function. Just want to do this sum. And you can use the rescaling property of this to basically divide n from all the factors. Basically, what I do is I define nx equal to k, ny equal to l, nm equal, sorry, nz equal to m. So when you do that, what you see is that you basically bring out all of the n dependents. And you are left with a dimensionless integral, dx, dy, dz, the delta function of n times x plus y, subtract z, subtract 1. And there's n to the beta, dx, y, z, 1, n to the minus 3 alpha. Beta, sorry, beta was the scaling behavior of that C.
They depended on tau, right?
They depend on, sorry?
They depended on tau.
On time.
Yeah, on time. So how come they look like they're time independent?
No, AK doesn't
depend on time. Depend on, okay, sorry, they depend on tau. They don't depend on short time. I'm trying to show that the solution of this plus the a n d tau equal to 0 and a n equal to a n, sorry, a 0 n to the minus alpha. I'm trying to show that this is a consistent set of solution. Okay. I'll show you that this power law in the end is a self-consistent solution of coherent phases.
And find the solution with this sums up. I'm not sure such solution exists. I mean, the one at the higher level, at the top level, in there.
Yeah, you can plug in
there with a caveat. I'll show you later. Question?
Really easy to check in one of the collapsing solutions if you get this. Did you check your?
I don't have the numerical data.
I never done any. sorry, that's your expertise, not mine. I could have asked. Sorry, that's my bad. The phase is very important, and I believe that there are this, and here's the reason, and we can check. Yes.
Almost looks impossible that Ansatz, when you say that the amplitude is a tau independent, is a solution. I don't think there are. I don't think there are solutions like that of that
well,
system.
Is exactly the same Ansatz you use to have your the stable solution.
The AMs are all changing.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Sorry. With this answer,
because cosine, all the cosines are 1 means all the sines are 0. That's why it's automatically satisfied that A is not changing. See, this is cosine here and the sine there. If I use this answer asymptotically, all the phases cancel. So the check in the
That system has the solutions that you said. There is no constraint. I can choose whatever A I want. It doesn't have to be exponentially suppressed or anything. Right? So as long as they are time independent, it's out.
Well, remember, he set the phase all to zero. So the sign is already ordering to zero. So he's satisfying the A tau equal to zero.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
So something is that. If I choose this phase, then there is no dynamic in A, which you also agree in your paper. Right. One is zero.
Let's see if he's going to claim that he's going to find a solution.
But it's not the solution of the equation.
Well, let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, but isn't that's only zero for one value of tau, isn't it? I mean, say it's ends. Is it not true? I mean,
so which one? The solution to the A equation is guaranteed by this. Because you kill all the sign in that equation. Sign something is zero, it is zero. So the A tau is exactly zero. Yeah. Then you worry that maybe the B equation is going to change this fact and then destroy everything. I'm going to show you that if you choose a power law like this, at least asymptotically, it doesn't destroy everything. Okay. But of course, for a given value of alpha. Okay. So basically, that boils down to this. You can see I want the B tau to be proportional to n. Right, that's going to maintain this property. So and there's n here. So I want the right-hand side to be n squared. So all I do is that I collect all these power of n, put them together. Right, this is basically n to the 3 plus beta minus 2 alpha. What you want is that this particular thing is n squared. Then you can maintain this behavior. You use the rescaling property, you get all the independence outside of your equation, and try to ask whether my independence give me the right power. Therefore, a beta give you an alpha. Okay. So you can do that, and you can do that easily directly in 4 plus 1 dimension. In 4 plus 1, you'll find beta equal to 3, and alpha equal to 2 is the right answer, that is here. Okay. In 3 plus 1 is very annoying. In 3 plus 1, I will tell you the answer. The process is annoying because this particular power law doesn't have a finite IR amplitude. Actually, goes 0. If you have a finite power IR amplitude, you use this power law, you get infinite energy. So whenever you say your fixed energy want to attend this power law, you mean you're actually in a process reducing A0 to 0. So this process becomes more complicated because there's also A0 here. You need to take a limit correctly as everything happens. Okay. But anyways, in 4 plus 1 dimension, it explicitly gives you this 2. In 3 plus 1, it tells you any alpha smaller than 3 half is consistent with the phase log behavior. And I will skip the detail there. So in 3 dimension, I cannot give you that weird number. But it is consistent with that weird number. In 4 dimension, I can give you that 2 exactly. Both of them are given. Sorry? 5 plus 1, no, basically because I don't have faith about the scaling behavior in 5 plus 1 of that C. But my guess is that it's going to be 4, beta is going to be 4, then this will be 2.5, I think. Okay, but that's a guess. Because I didn't calculate that myself. And I didn't, nobody else calculate that explicitly. And also the 5 plus 1 numerical result is I think is the smallest in quantity. So I don't have a lot of sources for that too. The coefficient C and their scaling behavior in 5 plus 1 dimension is not entirely clear to me, not by my own calculation and not by from any sources I saw. I don't think you guys calculated that exactly.
Yes.
If you tell me what the beta value is in 5 plus 1, I will predict alpha for you. My personal guess is 4, and that will be 2.5. But I have to confirm on that.
The
Polish group computed 2.4.
Okay.
In numerical example. 2.4. Yeah, I think it's 2.4. Sorry, no, 2.8. Anyways, between 2 and 3. Okay, but that's a numerical extracted answer. All right, so that's this one. Right? It shows that a phase coherent final state in that power law is self-consistent and give you the right power law. But this is not good enough, right? Because what I'm asking about is a phase. And what matters in a phase is always multiplied by 2 pi. Just telling you that the phase grow proportional to n is not going to, it's not good enough to say, well, this dominates, everything doesn't matter. Right? Every finite piece matters because you're going to multiply 2 pi. This is going to be order 1 number 2. So there's a very important next step to show you that there are some initial condition which sets the right finite piece of the phase in the beginning, and that is coherent. That is basically the final thing I'm going to show you here, if that is allowed in terms of time. Maximum 10 minutes, I promise. So, okay. Sorry, 1 second. Here. All right. And I will show you is actually what people call two-mode initial data. It's ideal for setting a phase coherent initial condition. This is also the initial data that has been tested repeatedly and lead to collapse. Okay? And I'll show you why a phase that is true. What do I mean by two-mode initial data is the following. Initially, you just give them equal amplitude, and everything else is zero. You start with that. And then?
But you have to try, there's more interesting cases like one with different width. But that's the same family, same type of finished data. You just change slightly the width, and you go from one behavior to the other one. So have you done that analysis?
Oh, the width? No.
Yeah. OK, because that would be more interesting. Because that. You can sell or you can argue that your estimates now prove that one would be stable, the other would be unstable.
Yeah, so I haven't done any scanning through initial conditions. I'm trying to provide one that is probably the best in the sense that initially it's phase locked, in the end it's phase locked, and I predict this is the center of all collapsing solutions.
Yeah.
And other things are near that.
The way it goes to the stable branch, to the unstable branch. And now you have a statement or a criteria to decide which way it's going to go. So if your criteria actually decides or shows that this is going to be the case, then okay, then you have
That in some sense is harder. And if I show you in this picture, I agree, but that's not my current goal, it's my future goal. What I'm saying is that there is a boundary here, right? Somewhere here is stable, it's unstable. What's that special boundary? It's hard for me. I'm trying to find is what's the property of, say, the most unstable one? Maintain phase coherence and go to black hole directly. And maybe I can understand other as the neighborhood of it. That's the strategy. I'm trying to find that particularly unstable one by solving for the phase constraint. And I'm going to show you the two-mode initial data. The amplitude doesn't have to be equal, just comparable, and everything else zero. It gives you initial seed of phases, which is coherent. And takes only a few steps. So basically, in this case, you actually don't want to use the AB equation because your A2 start to be zero, and there's an unfortunate divided by A2 there. So we revert back to the phi equation instead. They're the same equation. Okay. And basically, you write down their phases. It's going to be epsilon cubed. And actually, you ignore the C, because C will have some polynomial dependence on those indices. But initially, you're going to find that all the higher amplitudes are exponentially suppressed as a power of epsilon. So actually, don't care about the power law suppression comes with the C. So C disappears. All I care is that this C is non-zero. And I get a cosine of I think I'm writing too small, right? Okay. So, but anyways, basically, you turn on 1 and 0 and 1, you are going to drive 2 by this combination, allowing the resonance condition. And you're going to drive it in some particular, the frequency has to match. And you drive it in some particular phase. And what happens in the answer is inherit epsilon q. And it's going to linearly grow with time and has a cosine, which is basically its own frequency. It has to be. And plus a phase, which is this minus 2 pi. That's what happens when you drive something. You drive with a phase difference of minus 2 pi. Okay. And so this thing is going to be your initial B2. So this is a very trivial step. It turns out you can repeat this. So you ask, OK, so what's happening in my phi 3? It's now going to formally has two contributions here, because there are two ways to match your resonant condition. However, one of them obviously has higher amplitude. So this one is epsilon to the fifth. This one is actually epsilon to the seventh. So you're going to forget about that, suppressed. So you can drive by this term, and then you're going to find that your phi 3 is epsilon to the fifth t squared cosine omega 3t plus some phase. Actually, it's b1 plus b2 subtract b0 minus f pi. Okay? And this thing, you can plug in the b2 you had. This becomes 3 b1 subtract 2 b0 minus 2 times f pi. And this is b. And you can basically repeat the process using a mathematical induction. You can prove that the initial set of phases, the initial solution is given by this. Every time you're going to drive something in the next mode, you're going to pick up the difference between the first two modes and a phase angle difference half pi, and that's it. Therefore, asymptotically, when you go keep going, you increase the phase by this amount, and there's an overall constant. So the two mode initial data. Oh, and by the way, when you start to work out more terms, you'll start to find there are actually more than one term that contributes in the leading order, yet their phases all happen to be the same when you work out the math. So they're always going to have one family of this and growing to have this phase. Right. And this satisfies my requirement that asymptotically, the phase depends linearly depends on n. That's a coherent phase in the beginning. And you can see if you add a third mode, if it turns out only also A2 in the beginning, you will have the annoying situation that there'll be more terms contributing in the same order, and they don't agree on their phases. And this, I cannot prove that it's going to destroy this, but it's unlikely that this still happens. Question?
You have the power laws of T up front instead of the two time scale equation?
Yeah, so I'm doing the ordinary perturbation theory with this quantity is much smaller than one.
Okay, but if you look at the two time scale equations, you have to set an initial B2, B3, and so on. Like, that's a freedom. But here you're telling me that you have to have the B2 set to...
Yeah, I'm telling you that if you start with this initial condition, then B2, B3, B4 is not your freedom. It's determined by this. This sets the initial condition of that set of equations, the two-time equation.
But if I think about it, you set whatever initial...
Well, that's actually an illusion, because the equation is simpler when this is 0. So you shouldn't think... If it drives a zero amplitude, initially zero amplitude oscillator with a given force, you don't have a freedom to choose the initial phase. It follows what you drive it.
I mean, that's because you rewrote the equation in a singular way. There is a way of, I don't think the equations are singular, for example.
Yeah, if you look at the final equation, it's not singular, and you can solve it exactly, and that's what I do here. It's not singular. And I'm solving a non-singular equation here. I think Stephen's question is that if I solve it, it seems to be detecting the phase. If you look at the B equation, it seems to be a freedom. It is not, because you cannot use your B equation in a limit where an goes to zero. You have to use this, the true equation, and detect the phase.
But yeah, I'm not confused or puzzled that in your comment, you've got a third mode, and in the third mode, you're not going to see, you're going to see that they are not coherent.
Sorry?
You said if you add a third mode, not because of...
Yeah,
if you have a third mode, I believe so.
But then, again, we go back to the white holes or the not-so-white holes that does form a black hole. That has a whole bunch of holes. And so then there is something missing.
I agree. There is something for,
there is definitely something missing here. So what I've shown you is not complete, right? What I've shown you is that in the very end, when you are about to form a black hole, the observed power law is consistent. In the very beginning, you have the right initial condition for phase coherence. I haven't told you anything in between. And that's thing I do not know. Right? So we still need to fill in the gap from the very beginning, where the long time is less than order one, which I can use this approximation, show you have initial seed of coherent phases. I have to link that to the final phases when it's close to the power law. We know it's going to maintain that. In between, there are still dynamics and none.
Because there you're studying the phase of Kant theorem.
Right.
And so then the big tension in this problem was that the spectra seems to be fully commensurate. So why is that the instability doesn't seem to be always the case?
So again, what does it mean that the spectrum is commensurate?
That you can have plenty of results.
Plenty of
results. Right, because it's the.
So all the spectrums are associated with integers, and there are a lot of them being able to satisfy that like k plus L to the plus n.
There's all integers, you can always find 2k of that. Theory is, well, if you have plenty of resonances, you have a nonlinear coupling, then actually you're going to start transferring energy, and eventually this will just run away. So what we were arguing in the last paper is that there is a special set of configurations, of which there are many, that have a spectra upon perturbation of those states that are not commensurate. And so, my gut feeling is that that has to be part of the answer. Because otherwise, there is a theorem that is staring at us.
That I agree, but...
And that explains here, right? You're going to perturb around those, destroy the commensurate property, therefore you cannot have this energy cascade at all, phase coherent or not.
Right? Well, what I imagine is that you're trying to... is that you say, well, given this condition, how do you end up in a situation where things may or may not be phase locked?
Yeah.
And so then my gut feeling says that if you have a fully commensurate situation, then you probably are going to end up in phase lock.
It's required. It's not guaranteed.
Right. But then,
if you are not, then definitely you cannot.
Right.
That is correct. If you don't have the, like, if your omega n just have a small deviation, small and random deviation from integers every single n,
after a long time, the phase is automatically become incoherent just by the time dependence. That is true. Question?
So the equilibrium solutions, which I think you agree with, that you know, if you start near that, you might just oscillate around one of these equilibrium solutions.
Yes.
But then you have also, now you're saying that away from that, you can either have these coherent or incoherent type solutions.
No, I'm claiming that. Okay, so you guys' story is that there is an exactly static solution. Actually, an never changes, it's constant. And then there are like small perturbations around that which will stay in the neighborhood of that. Right, so that's basically this. And I'm trying to basically mimic you guys. Right, you guys say that you can analytically solve one special or a few special equations which not, don't change at all. And you can see that there are nearby orbits with states around them. And those are stable solutions.
See later about it, because they are not, I would not call them phase locked, because, well, one of the conditions of you being phase locked is the amplitude in the expansion does not depend on time. Those solutions that we call a quasi-periodic, their amplitude.
No, but these are the stable ones, these are bar, and he doesn't want them to be phase locked, this will be completely phase unlocked.
Okay,
so they're always
I'm confused at something of it.
Yeah. Let me talk to you guys together. But to answer that Stephen question very bad is that I want to mimic that.
I want to say there is a phase lock solution or a few special ones that does this. But I don't know about whether their neighborhood behave, whether the neighborhood persists down here, and I want to use your technique to analyze those in the future. But here I'm just trying to establish that this is there by providing that the final state, initial state, it seems to be consistent.
There's a lot to talk about over
All right, thank you very much.